Firstly, the Indian consumer, she wants it all. A good, reliable brand, a good product. When it comes to technology, the top specs, great price with offers, and an unbeatable after-sales service. I think there's a degree of philosophy that goes behind something like this. And one needs a radical change in one's perspective about one's life. No, when I quit, I was overjoyed. So the first 6 months were actually fantastic. I just loved being nobody and doing nothing.
Good. Okay.
Still, quite a bit of my time is being nobody and hiding somewhere and doing nothing much. So I think for the whole, if I may use the word ecosystem to really fire, you need a few things. First and foremost is you cannot ask people to manufacture here if it costs more.
Hi everyone, welcome to Chai and Chips. We have with us somebody who, after 25 eventful years in the industry, gave everything up to build his second innings in life. And the last job that he did at that time was CEO and MD of Lenovo India, during which time India region was the only region worldwide to be number one in both PCs and tablets. And he also, in 2017, won the coveted IIM Ahmedabad Young Achievers Award from an alumni point of view, so which was very, very special. And since then, he has been involved in a couple of startups. He has also had a few projects running in the background. And for the folks who don't know him, right, and I know him professionally and personally for quite some time, I can tell you that he's a big foodie. He has a fantastic sense of humor. He travels a lot. And most importantly, he's a terrific human being. So welcome to the show, Rahul.
Thank you, Prakash. Pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah. So this has been a long time coming.
Yes. And I'm glad we are doing it today.
Yeah. And we are also color coordinated.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got the dress memo. So let me start with you rose up the ranks in Lenovo, right? You spent a long time there. And India is a very unique market. So especially from the consumer and commercial business point of view, you would have seen a lot of different customers, partners, and business environments. So are there one or two moments or milestones which you think really kind of shaped your leadership style or gave you a view of the market?
So I can think of two such decisions that I made, which were difficult, and therefore they shaped the rest of my career. So first was when I was running marketing for Lenovo India. Lenovo then was a Chinese brand, and competition was saying it's a cheap Chinese brand, and you know, people had a lot of questions. But we did a pretty good job of building the awareness, building some degree of image of the brand. And the worldwide loved it, and they wanted to replicate it. And the CMO, the global CMO then, he came to India, he liked what he saw, and he says, can you do it for the rest of the world?
Oh, cool.
And I was stunned with that question because nobody had thought of that. Nobody had imagined that, hey, you can run something globally in the area of marketing from India. And there came the idea of a global marketing hub out of Bangalore. And he asked me to run it.
Okay.
So that was, you know, kind of a difficult decision. While it sounded very charming and very glamorous because it was a global role, but nobody had done it before. So it had all the pitfalls of anything pioneering, anything new. And I love to really do hardcore marketing, demand generation, really meet consumers. And this was kind of going to be doing marketing for the rest of the world. So I think that was I took the plunge. Honestly, I didn't have a choice. He didn't give me a choice. took the plunge. And I think that experience really was something I would not trade for anything else, Prakash. It taught me skills that I didn't have. How to handle resistance to change. How to do change management. It made me more sensitive to the different cultures all over the world. For the first time, I had team members who were placed all over the world. So I think it made me much more rounded and gave me a very different view of marketing. We were doing marketing for 100 countries in 25 plus languages. So while it's a global MNC and it had a global positioning, global messaging intended, but then how do you really satisfy the local needs while still staying on the global messaging? So I think it was definitely very different experience from what I had done earlier. And it honestly gave me a global perspective for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Second was immediately after that. I had done very well in marketing, both for India and globally. And marketing sometimes can be a little luxury role to do, wherein the performance metrics can have shades of gray. And once you are branded a star, that positioning stays for a long time. It's a very flattering positioning, and which is what I had. But then I got an opportunity to actually jump from hardcore marketing to hardcore business.
Mm-hmm.
Running a P&L of a large $500 million organization. And I didn't really have experience of running such a large organization. And then you know that, you know, there'll be a scorecard every quarter. You're no, not a hero anymore. You're a hero this quarter, you could be zero next quarter. So it required a lot of courage to jump into that role. A lot of my advisors told me, don't do it. You're in a good place. But then something within me said that that's the real thing. Well, marketing is good and marketing is very important. But unless you do sales, unless you run a business, you run a P&L, you've not really done the real thing. So I jumped into it. And I think that really again shaped me to do different things, bigger things later in life.
Okay. So you talked about that was the real thing, and hence you plunged into it despite some of your mentors saying, don't do it. What made you come to that conclusion?
No, so there were two choices. One was a safe choice, continue the path.
Hmm.
You know, there was a path being made for me to probably be the global VP in marketing based out of the US. And the other path was uncut, was rough, unpredictable. And it required courage to do that. So I just said that I'm going to do the difficult thing.
Hmm.
And I just bit the bullet.
So are you built like that? You end up doing more difficult or take more difficult choices?
I do end up doing unconventional things. So, you know, I tend to get bored a little fast with things. So if there are two choices, one is more adventurous, even though it may be a little more dangerous compared to the safe route, I would always take the other one.
Okay, interesting. So if you look at, you did a lot for marketing first and then you ran the business for Lenovo in India. And India is such a beast of a market when you look at from a consumer point of view, very diverse needs, demanding consumers. And at the same time, it's hungry for innovation all the time. And are there any things that stood out for you about the market, key learnings or insights that you feel the audience can take a lot from, people who are building businesses like consumer businesses here?
I mean, lots. But let me just maybe bring out a couple of them. Firstly, the Indian consumer, she wants it all. A good, reliable brand, a good product. When it comes to technology, the top specs, great price with offers and an unbeatable after-sale service. So, you know, while somebody can say, but why would any customer want anything else? That's true.
It's true.
But Indian consumers are, they want everything. They want the best brand. But other than maybe one or two iconic brands, they also want the best pricing.
Mm-hmm.
They also want the best specs. And not all organizations can get it all right.
True.
And if you see the organizations who've done very well in India are the ones who've got it all right. So for me at Lenovo, it was all about getting it as perfect as possible. Now, the reality is that we were not the most aspirational brand then.
At the time.
At that time. And it takes a very, very long time and it can maybe never become. So we worked with that handicap. Our distribution traditionally was much weaker than our competition.
Mm-hmm.
Our retail footprint, the retail experience that we were giving was not that great. So we worked a lot on everything, brought ourselves as close to the perfect mix as possible. And we did fairly well. And while doing all this, you also have to make money.
True.
Because you have to hit certain price points, but you have to also make profits. So I think all in all, it was a good learning experience wherein we were always looking at some mix, looking at new route to markets, looking at doing something innovative for the brand, expanding our distribution network. And there is no rocket science, Prakash, in doing business in India. It is basically just looking at the fundamentals. And these are the five things that I mentioned are the five things that you need. The difficult thing is that as the top management cannot have focus on more than two.
Okay.
So if you are able to get your focus to maybe four or three, then you have a better probability of doing a better job.
So in the file, you talked about price point, after-sale service.
Brand.
Decent brand.
Then route to market.
Route to market. Distribution.
And the specs.
And the specs. Yes.
And of course, the quality goes with the brand.
Okay. And from where you sit now, and you've experienced startups as well now, any brand that stand out for you that do at least many of them, if not all, very well?
From a tech...
Tech or any other industry?
I think from a tech point of view, Xiaomi did it very well.
Yeah, I agree.
Till the time they did it.
Yeah.
And of course, then they got into some rough weather. But which is why Xiaomi became so massive.
Agree.
So massive. I think Samsung does a good job.
Mm.
Samsung does a very good job. Sony has got many things going right, but some things they're not as aggressive in their brand and marketing narratives. So these are some very, very good brands.
Agree.
I think Boat was a pioneering brand. It did very well. There's nothing unique about their products.
Yeah.
You know, they all got it from China like anyone else.
Right.
But they built their brand very well.
Yeah.
And they built their distribution very well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically the fundamentals.
Yeah.
And very few people are able to get this right.
Yeah. And leadership is a big part of creating the fundamentals and consistently building on top of the boring stuff, which most people would try to argue you need different things at different points in time. So are there any things that shaped your leadership philosophy and gave you either your global exposure or the jobs that you did a position that helped you really build high-performance teams? Because most of the large companies, global MNCs, have different priorities globally. You have to marry that with the local priorities. You have to have different cultures represented and really feeling included or part of your journey. How do you do that? What philosophy did you follow?
So while I was at Lenovo, we didn't really have a strong global culture. Like Intel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you spent a lot of years in Intel.
Yeah.
Intel had a very distinct culture.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And you would go to any country and people would behave in a way that would adhere to that culture.
Yeah, very true.
Lenovo was a young company. still a young company, and therefore the culture globally was still settling in. So part of the leadership journey was to set up a culture for India, which would be distinct, of course, not in conflict with the global culture. And that is something we co-created with 50 of our managers.
Okay.
I think that set the tone for a lot of things. To me, leadership is a fine balance between being able to connect with your leadership team so deeply so that they feel inspired by you, and at the same time, holding them responsible, accountable for results.
Mm-hmm.
Because hardware in India is a hardware anywhere is a very competitive market.
Yeah.
There is no tolerance for any miss.
Right.
So how do you balance the two? And it was challenging because people, including me, don't want to be challenged, or at least challenged in a certain way. So my style was more direct, and some people struggle with it. Some others love the authenticity because I would do straight talk and not leave anybody guessing. So I would say leadership was a constant effort.
Mm-hmm.
At no point of time I felt that I've excelled it, that I'm a great leader.
Yeah.
Because you're always getting feedback. Some good feedback, some not so good feedback. And therefore, you are always listening to the feedback, trying to improve, trying to connect better, trying to build a high-performance culture. But I think it is not something that I can really articulate it clearly.
Yeah. Now, there is an art to it. There is a science to it.
Yeah.
I completely agree to that. But are there any behaviors, are there any habits that you have stayed true to in order to accomplish those things? Something comes to mind.
So I mean, when it comes to running a place, you know, strategy and planning has a place. You can do 5% of the time, but 80% of success is execution, getting into the details, dirtying your hands, rolling up your sleeves. And there were times I would get accused of micromanagement. And when you get that feedback, then you don't know what to do. How do you handle that feedback? Because you don't want to be called a micromanager. You don't want to be a micromanager.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if results are not coming, and you see that some people are not really getting into details, then you have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
So I was heavily into execution. Whatever success we've had, I would say not because of very innovative strategy or any breakthrough planning or any brilliant genius people. I've always had the luck to be working with good people, but I think the success is because of the detailing that I would get into. So that was pretty close to my heart.
Yeah.
Whenever, even earlier, if I ran marketing, I would really get to the bottom of everything, not believe whatever is presented.
Yeah.
Keep doing double click, double click, double click, double click, till everyone goes crazy. But that is what worked for me.
Actually, paying attention to detail, I have observed, is a hallmark of a great manager. So you got to get to the details, and you can't do it at a high level, frankly.
But a lot of people, Prakash, don't want to do it. It's because it's just plain hard work.
Hard work. Yeah.
And when you become a leader, sometimes you tend to feel entitled.
Yeah.
That I have an army of people to get into details. I will just look at the big picture.
Big picture.
And quite often, and there are enough examples, the slips happen just because nobody looked into the details.
Yeah. And the other part you mentioned also resonated with me, and would love your opinion on it, is my observation is if you're looking for no micromanagement as a employee, right, if you're a part of the team, you have to earn the right to be completely independent. You can't be joining a team and without any past track record that your manager is comfortable, he or she is not going to give you the latitude unless they are comfortable with your competence level. So if you're frustrated as an employee that I get micromanaged, you have to actually look at it from a manager point of view also, that maybe you have not done all that needs to be done to build that trust. I'm assuming manager is all well-intentioned, is competent manager. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, see, trust, trust is the fundamental factor behind this. Now, the fact is there are some micromanagers. There are some people who, I would say, have a disease of micromanaging, who cannot trust anyone.
Fair.
Right? Yeah. So I cannot judge myself, but I would say that for me, it was more case by case, that wherever people were doing the job, doing the detailing and performing, then you stay hands off.
Yeah.
Because those people will get demotivated if you touch them too much.
Right.
But, it takes all kind of people to make the world and make a company. So there would be different people. I agree that trust has to be earned.
Yeah.
And therefore, to be left alone and not managed, not leave aside micromanaged, also needs to be earned.
Yeah.
And I saw that some of the best people perform best if they're not managed, not even micromanaged, though they're so self-driven.
Yeah.
And when they are managed, something unsettles them. So you got to find which leader needs what kind of management. True. So you were asking about leadership style. I think the best style is to be customized.
Yeah.
To have the sense and the maturity to read the situation, read the person, and use the leadership strategy that is best for that person.
Yeah. And that takes time.
It takes time, and there are maybe a million books on leadership. I didn't read any. But yeah, you learn that, hey, this thing is working for A.
Yes, yeah.
It just doesn't work for B.
Yeah, agree. And all comes with time and self-awareness and observation.
And you have to be also aware.
Yeah.
You have to keep watching yourself.
Correct. So, you had a fantastic career. And you were at peak of your powers, so to say, when you decided that this is it and I'm going to give up my corporate life. This was July 2021. What made you come to that decision? Was it an aha moment or a certain set of things that came together? Because many people think about it, but very few people actually end up doing it. So what made that decision happen for you?
I think there's a degree of philosophy that goes behind something like this. And one needs a radical change in one's perspective about one's life. It doesn't happen overnight. There is no aha moment. And different people have different views to it. I did what worked for me. I enjoyed my career. I think I really enjoyed till the time I enjoyed. And then I started feeling bored and repetitive. And even before that, I had planned to have a second innings of my life, because it's very easy to go on. You know, you are walking on a certain path and just
on a treadmill.
So one has to be comfortable with uncertainty, comfortable with obscurity, comfortable with no titles, no power, no stature, or less of it, and also no flow of money. So it requires a lot of planning. If I look at my Excel sheets, which I've shown it to my dear ones always, when I was 36 or 37, I'd started building a plan that if I reach this point, then I will decide whether I want to
continue or not.
So it I think it's a mix of long-term factors, your mindset at that point of time, short time. If I were enjoying, if I were loving everything that I was doing, probably I would have continued.
Yeah.
So I think it's a mix of a lot of these things. And for me, I'm somebody who tends to think, why am I doing what I'm doing? What is the meaning? Why am I in this meeting? Why are we having this conference call? Why are we having this review meeting? And the meaning in those activities started decimating.
Okay.
Over the last 2 years. And then I was also getting a little charmed by the startup world. So I said, if I have to take a plunge, then I have to do it now.
Oh, no. A lot of it is similar.
Yeah, I mean, you should also talk about it because you followed kind of my path a couple of years later. So what went through your mind and how was it different from what I went through?
Yeah, in my case, a large part was family not being happy. Seattle, combination of weather, the timing of our move. We moved because we had done like 5 international moves and all of them had gone great until that point when Seattle didn't work. So that was a big reason why I decided. And what you said, repetitive and not learning enough. Though the job was fantastic, I learned a ton in the last job that I did. It ended up being more of the same. So that was the reason why I chose to just quit with no plan B. And I also had startup ambitions. So I did a couple of startups, participated in them for the last year. It was tremendous learning, but it also, like you said, there's no schedule. And in the first 6 months of my quitting, I had a hard time. It was very difficult to have no schedule, which I did not think it'll be a problem when I was quitting. And it was not the case. I don't know whether you went through the same just when you quit.
Look, when I quit, I was overjoyed. So the first 6 months were actually fantastic. I just loved being nobody and doing nothing.
Really? Okay.
Still, quite a bit of my time is being nobody and hiding somewhere and doing nothing much.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. But yeah, at some other time, you know, we are all victims of our background, of our beliefs. So it does start knocking you sometimes.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Was it too early? And there are people who will keep adding value to your life. So there are these moments, like my mind has thousands of thoughts every day.
Really? Yeah.
So there are times one feels elated, feels very fulfilled, feels very peaceful, feels very blessed. And there are times when a degree of restlessness seeps in and you got to quell it, because this is how the human mind is. If the human mind knows that you are happy, it will start creating problems. So you got to work at it. And if you go back to the time when you were working and I was working, it was actually similar. Was it all hunky-dory all the time? Was it all great? No, we had our ugly times too.
Yeah.
So life is same. It's all about choices.
Correct.
And you got to see 80% of your life what you want it to be. 20% will be difficult.
Yeah.
And there will be times and days when 80% will look ugly and repulsive. But that's life.
Yeah.
And over a period of time, you know, you get more and more comfortable with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think we are all conditioned by our environment. And that environment most times tells us to just keep going at 100 miles an hour, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't work. And it is very personal journey is what I would say, even for the audience who are listening. Two of us did similar things in terms of quitting with no plan B. But at the same time, we had similar but different journeys as well, mentally, passing through that. Yeah. But do you regret it at any time?
No, I mean, see, regret is more about policy. You can regret anything and everything in life.
Yeah.
Right? But regret is such a useless path, in my opinion, because you can never turn the clock back.
Yeah.
And you, now, if you know that you made a wrong decision because the inputs that you were using were wrong, then, yeah, maybe you should have the humility to say, hey, it was a mistake.
Yeah.
But you, when you make a decision like this, it is based on a lot of emotions, a lot of pre-planning. And things may not work out because success is not guaranteed.
100%.
Even in our professional career, there was great years and there were not so great years.
Yeah.
So then you can't say that, hey, was it a good decision to get into, let's say, a P&L role? Life just keeps rolling.
Yeah.
And I mean, my principle is that you have to have the courage to take the, pick the tougher choice.
Yeah.
I would feel very low about myself if I were to play it safe all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, I would have more money, enjoy the stature, but this has its own charm.
Yeah.
To me, this is more real.
And both of us, I would say, need to be grateful to be able to be in this position as well, right? So that's what I keep thinking, that just giving up and to be able to have that opportunity is not given to everyone.
No, absolutely. And they say the absolute, the utmost freedom in our kind of world,
yeah,
is the freedom of time.
Yeah.
If you can be the owner of your time,
yeah,
and not be a slave of the routine that the corporate life demands, I think it has its own charm.
Yeah. True. Very true. Yeah. And the part for me was not the title or the power. It was less about that, but more I was driven by learning, and that learning comes when you're part of something which forces you to learn at a quick pace. Have you seen that kind of getting impacted since you left?
No, I can tell you that I learned far more in the last 4 years than I learned in the corporate world.
Really? Oh, okay.
It's a pretty big statement to make. The corporate life is pretty, you're sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
For example, while I was running a big P&L, I never had to worry about cash. Somebody would worry about cash, and because you're a part of a large global company, if you're running short of cash, the cash will just come in.
Yeah.
Last 4 years, all I've dealt with in the startups that I'm involved in different forms is cash. When you have a brand, people take you seriously. When you have a position, people take you seriously. They want to meet you. The doors get opened. But when you don't have a brand, when you don't have a title, you only have a past resume.
Correct.
I think it humbles you.
Yeah.
And to me, that is the real life.
Yeah.
So, to me, this whole experience is, when I'm using this word a lot, real. But to me, this is the reality of life. And anybody and everybody should live without the titles, without the brand, to really understand how life is.
100% agree. Yeah. Yeah. And it gives you a different perspective. Like even doing this podcast, something that I had thought about for years, and I've talked about to you as well several times. But then I decided to take the plunge, saying, life is not infinite. I'll have to do it someday. But it's just different from having a title and doing a job. Very, very different. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look back, you can say, okay, I walked or ran on one path, which I often used to say that in my last role, It felt like I was driving a bullet train.
Mm-hmm.
Tracks were laid out. The train was very well powered. And I had to just do something.
Yeah.
But from that, you move on. You move to a forest where there's nothing laid out. There's hardship. There is uncertainty. And that has its own charm.
Yeah.
And don't you want both the experiences?
I agree. And the last 2 years, as like you also mentioned, it hit home for me. It's been such immense learning, more than anything, is about you yourself. Less about technology or any other thing which you can read. And if you're part of the company, you will gather much more. But about yourself. Can you deal with uncertainty? Can you deal with having no schedule, no routine? So, yeah. Super. So look forward to continuing our conversations in our food journeys together.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love our lunches together, and I hope we continue doing that.
Yeah. So that's a good break time to do a bunch of speed round questions.
Okay.
Okay. So let me start with, if you could give me one piece of advice to your younger CEO self, what would that be in 5 words or less?
Well, I could have been more patient with people and results.
Fair point. And what's a tech prediction you made that was completely wrong?
Oh. I don't do a lot of predictions. But there was a time when when the online e-commerce sales was rapidly growing, and I openly said in front of Flipkart CEO that laptop sales will never grow beyond 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And my entire team squirmed. It was a little out of line comment to make. But I said, no, people will go back to offline. People do want to, have a feel of the product before they buy. But I got wrong, because notebook then became 50%. Online sales became 50% of notebook sales. So not a big tech prediction, but something I totally got it wrong publicly.
Interesting. So beyond work, what's the one non-tech hobby or passion that helps you recharge? I think I already know the answer to the question.
Yeah, but you know that. I mean, I am I'm just too addicted to workouts.
Yes.
So I do long workouts, and then I do a lot of walks. So that is really something that I think charges me back. Not that I need to be charged back. For what?
For yourself.
Yeah, true. It just makes me feel very good about my whole self. That's true.
Yeah. Agree. Chai or chips when you're strategizing for world domination?
Oh, I'm a chai guy right from my childhood.
What kind of chai do you like?
I like the traditional ginger tea, which is brewed for at least 12 minutes.
Huh? You have very specific
requirements. Every day, I am very fussy about tea. You can ask about that to people who make fun of me and then say it's impossible to give him the tea that he wants. But yeah, it's 12 minutes of brew with a lot of ginger.
And which chai brand appeals the most to you?
So we've been Taj Mahal users for long.
Okay.
I haven't tried a lot of other because my wife doesn't let me try. But yeah, Taj Mahal works.
Okay. So far, yeah. One innovation you saw emerge from India that genuinely surprised you?
I think innovation can be of any kind. So I'm a guy who gets into operations. I think the way this whole quick commerce and even the food delivery, I think the way this has been perfected that in about 8 to 9 minutes of placing the order, you get the things at home, which means somebody has accepted the order, somebody has taken the stuff out from the shelf, somebody has done the billing, somebody has done the packing. There is a guy who's available there. He knows where to come and he's at your doorstep. I mean, it is something that I don't think I could have ever been able to achieve.
Yeah, remarkable.
Yeah. Wow.
Any part of the city, any part of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most parts of the country, I would say. Yeah.
So there are times when the driver is there and earlier we would say, okay, you know, you go and get it. But the guy will get it faster.
Faster. Yeah. I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who was talking about he had come from Singapore and he was staying with his brother. And they asked him, do you want chai? And they ordered one chai. He was thinking that chai will be made at home. They actually ordered it from chai point or wherever.
Yeah.
And it came in no time. Yeah. Which really blew his mind. And living in India, we know that is possible. Yeah. True. Okay, so let's get back to our conversation. And one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about was about Make in India. Because as Lenovo, Make in India was something that you pursued as a path within the country. One of the earliest brands, I would imagine, who did that in PCs and accessories. What were your observations at that point in time? What were the initial assumptions you made or Lenovo made, which were proven right or wrong in the initial part of your journey of making in India?
So Lenovo, like the other brands, had a factory. So we've always had a factory in Pondicherry. But Make in India was never on my agenda.
Okay. And why
so? It was in nobody's agenda.
And why so?
Because we never saw any benefit of manufacturing in India. The whole supply chain from China was so efficient. And once in a while, we did the cost-benefit analysis, and it came out that if you manufacture, which is basically assemble, if you assemble in India, it would actually be a little more expensive, 2 to 3%. Secondly, then you'll have to also worry about the spare parts management.
Service, inventory.
Inventory management. Because in a large company, country like China, it gets used. But in India, if you're left with some spare part, then you got to take a hit on your P&L. And then the whole logistics. It never appealed.
And which year are you talking about?
I'm talking about 15, 16, 17.
Okay.
The first few years, and the government also didn't really push hard on it. It was never on any brand's agenda, Prakash.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, finally when the government started pushing, and I think it's a step in the right direction because you've got to think long term.
Correct.
Right? China cannot remain the superpower, manufacturing superpower forever.
Mm-hmm.
We got to think of next 20, 30 years. And India, the biggest benefit is leverage.
Mm.
The wages there are 4 to 5 times out of India.
Right.
While they're doing robotics. But still, I think India has a good opportunity here to get into manufacturing.
Completely agree.
So government then came up with this production-linked incentives, I think 2018 or something.
Yeah.
That didn't work because they were not very well conceived. Then they came up with PLI 2 thing in 2021 or 22.
Yeah.
Just when I was leaving. That, I think they had taken feedback from the
industry.
From the industry. That was good. And they also, did a bit of a pull and push approach. So they said, this is the incentive, this is the carrot, but then there's also a bit of stick.
Mm.
So we really do want you to manufacture in India. But it was never a strategic play.
Yeah.
Until now, I still feel it is not very strategic because we are still not doing manufacturing. We're still doing assembly.
And how would you qualify one versus the other?
So if the components, are getting manufactured in India, let's say the hard disk, let's say the CPU, let's say even the LCD monitor of a laptop, if these things, or RAM, if these things are getting manufactured in India, then I think then it makes sense to call it manufacturing. And some baby steps have been made. Some people may say more than baby steps.
Right.
Especially on the desktop front.
Mm.
So it's a slow cooking. Will take time. But will it be... See, how does a company look at any initiative or any project? Will it improve its competitiveness? Will it improve its market share? Or will it improve its profits? Or will it motivate people?
Right.
So manufacturing in India somehow has not appealed to any of these four. At best, the government is saying, okay, we will give you incentives so that your cost is same as that from China. So how does anyone benefit from that?
Yeah.
So therefore, it needs maybe long-term, if the manufacturing in cost in China goes up and India builds economy of scale, then there'll be a relative benefit, but not yet.
Okay. So you mentioned, and I agree with you, that longer term, doing manufacturing in the country for hardware and components is the right thing from strategic autonomy or building innovation locally. All of those points are absolutely agree with you. But if you were to be given the pen based on your learning and experience of Lenovo Make in India, what kind of policies would you write to make sure it happens faster than what you believe is happening today?
So I think for the whole, if I may use the word ecosystem to really fire, you need a few things. First and foremost is you cannot ask people to manufacture here if it costs more.
Fair point.
So you got to give them incentive to maybe make it a little advantageous. And this is an investment the government will have to do, because after three, four years, the government will not need to make this. This is an investment for the future, number one. Number two, I think the whole labor productivity and labor loss. Nobody looks at India and says, hey, yeah, this is a country we want to do manufacturing in. Because our productivity is low, we all know that. Our labor laws are complicated. And you know, who do they compare all this with? China, which is not a democracy, but that's the competition.
Correct.
But even countries like Vietnam have done so well.
That's true.
Right? Third is the whole infrastructure. The whole ports infrastructure, the logistics. Because importing so many things, so many components is very complicated compared to just importing the product. So the supply chain, for them, it's a nightmare to manage 50 parts versus one finished product. So can the government make that part better? Can the infrastructure really improve? And lastly, the overall sense of ease of doing business in India.
Mm. And when you say ease of doing business, how would you describe
it? Up to red tapeism, bureaucracy, other things that come with all this.
Right.
So I think that is where we've not made progress, because people just don't want to give up their powers.
Okay.
So if these, I think if these four things, they run in confluence, and I must say, while I'm somebody who does not hesitate to criticize the government, that this government has the right intent, and they have made the right moves. Now, if I were in government, what would I do? Because to be in the government, to do anything is very difficult, because it's so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
When you are in a private sector, it's... You
can do it.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's easy for us to criticize. But I think the government has been consistent. They do listen. But it's anything in this area will take years to formulate. Mobile phone is a good success story. But there also we are largely assembly.
Yeah, which is true. And agree with you that it's a long game. Most of the ecosystems around the world has taken a couple of decades, like you mentioned China. Even Malaysia, Vietnam, they have been at it for a while as well. Malaysia has been for a long time, in fact. And if you look back at your experience, the Make in India for Lenovo, did you see any divergence or improvement in terms of the buildup of skills or the buildup of design capabilities or anything beyond pure manufacturing, which makes the assembling over time grow towards more value add?
No, unfortunately, the design is still not being done in India. And I think that would be also one of the key milestones in this whole manufacturing journey.
Yeah. A large part of the value is captured in design.
The design.
In most cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are design capabilities, but none of them have really done anything at scale. See, we have good engineers.
Correct.
We have good designers. And a lot of people in the US who design are Indians.
Mm-hmm.
But we've not really done things at scale here.
Yeah. And the path that you see, given it's long-term, no question, you see movement in the right direction from where you sit or what your experience has been?
Yeah. I mean, as I said, if I look at last 8 years or 7 years since the government started this, there are minor changes, minor improvements that happen every year. And then there is this whole tipping point concept that, you know, if all the brands, let's say computer brands, start doing 60-70% of manufacturing in India, which I think would come to about $6-7 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, if they show the intent to export, then the component manufacturers will come here if they find the whole environment healthy. So it can happen.
Yeah.
But it's not that people are in a rush to come here.
Yeah.
It has to be cultivated. And the government has to get involved at the highest level.
Yeah. A large part is consistency of execution.
Yeah.
Over a very long period of time. Yeah. Very cool. Great insights, Raul. So, yeah, switching gears a bit, if you were to look at the India ecosystem, right, what are one or two trends or segments you see as huge opportunities which are in keeping with skills and capabilities of India to build product companies or companies in general in tech?
No, I think you said it. And I think a lot of people have said a lot about it, that doing software development for a project is one thing, because mm-hmm. somebody just tells you what to do.
Yeah.
But building a product that solves the problem of organizations or consumers globally, and the ability to build a global product brand, I think it's a great opportunity. Now, one would really wish that a company like Zoho really become a global brand.
Yeah.
I mean, what is so great in creating a ERP? If you look at the logic or the code of creating the ERP, anybody can create it. And it's true, right? But then how do you, A, create a brand, and how do you sell globally? These are the two skills that are needed. And I think this is a good opportunity here, because this is what, if you look at the Infosys of the world or the TCS of the world, they've been wanting to do, but have had very limited success. Because they've not, in my opinion, because they've not put their might behind it. It has been one of the initiatives. But the top management says that in the next 5 years, we will put all that we have to create a product that will appeal to the Fortune 500 companies. I think that is
worldwide.
That is one thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we have an opportunity because countries smaller than us have product companies
yes.
which are world beaters. Why can't we do it? Look at Europe. Yeah, many smaller countries in Europe can boast about it. Agree. So you've seen exposure across large companies, led large company, and done startups for the last couple of years or so in a variety of different capacities. So from a human side, right, can you share some behavior or skill that can make a person stand out and do very well in their careers? This is a piece of advice for people listening.
You mean in the context of technology or...
In the context of technology or careers in general?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't want to sound like giving a lot of generic advice. I mean, my son doesn't listen to me at all. And I think I assume that nobody would want free advice. But the basics, you know, do more than what is expected
mm-hmm.
from you. Be proactive than reactive. People love employees who are proactive.
Yeah, 100%.
People love employees who take initiatives. Don't just keep working hard. My motto has been not just work hard, but keep combining the hard work with smart work. My theory is most people, including leaders, spend 60-70% of the time doing useless things.
And why do you think that is the case?
Because that is how the world is. Like, meetings have to happen. Because without meetings, we feel useless. And managers have a need to manage. I think managers will become more productive if they manage less. People who know me will say, look, how is he talking? Because I managed all my life. But now I'm an old man, I can say that you need to manage less. You need to have less meetings.
You're not old, Rahul.
Well, by age I am. So it's the basic things, you know, don't plan too much. Don't do too much of career planning. Just focus on today. I never focus on tomorrow.
Yeah.
From a career point of view. Just do a good job today. Do a fantastic job. Keep taking feedback from your managers. Keep building good relationships with people around. It's very mundane advice that I can give.
All great pointers. And it's very hard to do the basics.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I failed in half of them.
I agree.
Yeah.
Same here. Yeah, it's very hard to do anything which most people know is important and you should do it to be able to consistently do it for a very long period of time. Very hard.
Right.
Yeah. You see, you can preach to the others, but you yourself...
Doing it yourself, yeah.
It is hard. Yeah. So, last question for you. Right. And this I ask all my guests. The India's journey on hardware, semiconductors, deep tech is more than just about domestic growth. It's about our place in the global technology map. So fast forward 10, 15 years. Where do you see India's position on that map? And what needs to happen today to make that a reality?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question. And I think everyone gets a little excited while thinking about it and while replying, there's a degree of hope. And hope is what we must all have. And I don't know, one decade or two decades, but definitely India will be right up there,
mm-hmm.
without a doubt. Just forget the population dynamics. But I think somewhere you cannot talk about technology without mentioning India globally. Now, where have we missed out? It's pure play innovation, pure play design. Even if you look at AI, there are no AI companies in India.
Yeah.
Right? And that is one reason why they're saying the stock markets are not doing as well. So I hope that we are able to build true AI while we are good at creating these models of quick commerce. But can we really do genuine deep tech? So I'm hoping that all this will happen because an Indian entrepreneur is a is an amazing animal. And to me, it's a matter of time before some of them will jump onto it. Because it can be done. It is not that you need to invent a light bulb.
True.
And the innovation is not just inventing a light bulb or electricity or internet. It is all about doing...
Even incremental.
Yeah, incremental things and build something substantial, right?
Yeah.
So it's a... We don't know why it's not there.
Hmm.
And there are a lot of reasons. Our blood DNA doesn't have R&D, DNA, blah, blah, blah. And they want quick results and R&D and design
take a long
years.
Time.
And, you know, the investors don't have the patience and therefore the founders don't have the money to do it. But we're hoping that will change.
Yeah.
And that is my hope. Yeah. That in, let's say, 1 to 2 decades, we'll have 10 companies which will have global reputation of tech innovation.
Yeah. I absolutely believe so as well. Yeah. We can look forward to India really shining in true blue innovation in the future. So is there anything else that we should talk about that we didn't cover? No?
We can talk about anything, but I think this is good enough. It's good duration. So.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, thank you very much, Rahul. I've always admired you as a person. I got the opportunity to work with you professionally and now know you personally. So, look forward to staying in touch. And thank you very, very much for coming over and doing this for us.
No. Likewise, you know, I share the sentiment. And it's great that we are now connected with our families also.
Yeah.
So hope the friendship will only grow.
Thank you.
And thank you, really. It's an honor.
Oh, honor.
Being invited to something like this.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for making the time, man.
All right.
For our audience, please follow, subscribe to our show. It would help us reach other people. Please forward to folks you know so that you can spread the word for us. And do give us feedback on the kind of topics, the kind of guests, the kind of conversations you would like to have with us. So with that note, thank you once again. Thank you for being on Time Tips.